Hello and welcome to a new season of Something Rotten. A new season, but kind of a throwback to the very beginning. Because Blake Hester, my co-host, you might remember that the... It's very distracting to talk while you're doing that.
Hold on, I just gotta finish the measure. Okay, good. That's
the best edited podcast in gaming. You might remember that the very first game that we covered on Something Rotten was a little game called Max Payne 3. Woo! It was a spin-off of the podcast Game Query. Woo! And we said, you donate it to charity, we'll cover Max Payne 3. Now, when we did that, I had not played Max Payne 1 nor Max Payne 2. And now, 5 years later, we've decided to fix it.
You've played half of Max Payne 1.
Max Payne, baby.
You played half of
That's right.
You still haven't played Max Payne 2.
Blake, you seemed very excited about this in your just little messages that you were sending me while we were gearing up for this episode.
Yeah. Here's the fucking thing. Max Payne and his oeuvre of games, one of the most important games in my life. Max Payne 1 and 2. So revisiting, I've revisited Max Payne 2 in the recent years, but this is my first time playing Max Payne 1 in earnest since I was a literal child. And coming to it and finding out it largely holds up and still slams has been a treat of all treats. I mean, this has been the best week of my damn life. Two guys got in a fight on the roof of my building earlier today, and somehow...
One earthquake. Two
today,
dudes get in a fight. Three Max
Listen,
Payne.
Folks, this is how crazy today's been. There was an earthquake in New York. You might have seen everyone tweeting about it for hours. It was a baby earthquake. We don't need to be tweeting about it this damn much. And then two of the roofers got in a fist fight on top of my building, and the cops had to show up. And somehow the 30 minutes I played a Max Payne today is still the best part of my day. With all this, it's crazy. And I have a beautiful girlfriend and a dog, and still Max Payne 1 has been beating all that out.
Now, listeners, they identified, though I don't think they know that they did at this point, kind of fun thing about this season, which is it is the first season that we have done where you have played the game and I have not. Previously, either neither of us have played the games before covering them, or I've played them and you haven't. But this is the first time that you know what's going to happen, and I am in the dark.
Yeah, it's good to hold that power over you.
Yeah, do you feel powerful?
You
feel
do.
Strong?
I feel like a big man, and you, in my eyes, look like a little man. And that's how I will refer to you the rest of the season, but a little man.
Well, thankfully, we're bringing on another big man to this episode, because not only are we a throwback to the old podcast Game Query and that we're covering a Max Payne game, but we also have one of the original hosts of that podcast, a man who we've used to sell Nebula to hundreds, if not thousands, of listeners.
A man I'm sure is glad that his one achievement we gave him was co-host of Game Query. Nothing else he's done in life, just that one.
Leo Vader.
That's what I get stopped for on the street. Yeah, thanks guys for having me. I do love the game, but not as much as my fiance. I feel like I want to distance myself from that take a little bit.
Wait, what?
I still love my fiance more.
Oh, I thought you were saying you don't love Max Payne as much as your fiance loves Max Payne. I was like, oh my God, Marie, what's up? That rocks.
Marie, the coolest.
Yeah, Marie is the coolest, but I guess for not that specific reason. What's up, Leah?
Hey, what's up?
What's up?
Glad to be here.
No further questions. Cool.
Glad to be a large man in your Rolodex.
Just a big man, not a large man. Leo, I feel like when we were picking guests for this, you seemed like an obvious choice, but I wasn't actually sure after inviting you. Had you played Max Payne 1 before?
I'm sure I've touched it. Something about the nightmare sequence was like, I have played this before. I have this visceral memory of how it feels to slide off the edge of this blood trail. But my primary memories are like reading about this game on Easter egg websites before I had the chance to play that many games. Oh. Reading about this game's iconic Easter eggs.
Can you give us one of those Easter eggs?
The rat
right
one
off the bat
is in chapter 2. Did y'all do the rat one?
The giant rat shows up, right?
No.
Oh, I'm thinking of a different game.
You either go ahead and get a grenade and come back to the start, or you cheat yourself a grenade or a Molotov cocktail. I could barely get it to work. But there's a hole in the wall at the very start of chapter two that you hear rats squeaking through. And if you throw a grenade in there, it blows up and it's supposed to give you a message, objective text. I had declared war on the rats. And then you go like three rooms ahead and there's a bunch of rats scurrying around on the floor. And if you've done this Easter egg, they all have guns and they're shooting at each other and you.
That rocks.
And when the last one dies, it does the like slow motion spin around with the rat screech as the yell. It's really good.
That's awesome.
And then further, I was reading forums about it and people were like, yeah, and if you shoot this light and then you take the side of the winning team of rats, then they'll follow you and help you kill all the enemies. Couldn't get that close to working. That one sounded schoolyard fake.
Hey, I got a story about an Easter egg in this game too, but y'all need to vamp for a minute. It's a physical prop I need to go grab.
Oh. Well, I'll say, I erroneously, for some reason, believed that this was like a kind of a late 90s PC game. And I was surprised when just doing some research on it to find out that it came out in 2001, both because I thought it was a 90s game for some reason, but also it is further proof that 2001 is the single best year for video games ever, because it joins the ranks of Silent Hill 2 and Metal Gear Solid 2, two games that we've covered on this show, and I believe Tony Hawk. And Leo, go ahead, name those other 2001 games.
Oh, I definitely have a lot. I was not just waiting.
Grand Theft Auto 3, you were going to say. Halo, Super Smash Bros. Melee.
You're talking about games that came out in 2001?
Yeah, Blake, I didn't realize this was a 2001 game.
That's right, baby.
Madden NFL 2002.
I believe the level we stopped on.
Eco.
I believe the level we...
Twisted Metal Black.
I believe the level we stopped on does have the Twin Towers in it, because this game came out right before 9/11. So
yeah, it came out in like July. Well, it was like long delayed.
Yeah.
They kind of started working on it, or at least had the concept on it, like 96, and it was supposed to come out in 2000. And if you read reviews of it at the time, they're all like, well, we've been seeing screenshots of this thing for forever now, but it's finally out and turns out it's really good.
Okay, so here's an Easter egg. I went and grabbed my PlayStation 2 copy of Max Payne, which is not the version I grew up playing. We can get into that later. It's a bit of a Louisville, Kentucky Kinko's lore attached to it. Anyway, let me crack this open. This might sound good to nostalgic listeners. Yeah, sound of a PlayStation 2 box opening.
Enjoy that ASMR, everyone.
Anyway, remember when games used to come with manuals?
Oh,
so sick.
Yeah.
Now
that
Tony Hawk does.
What? Oh, this is crazy.
You'll get it. You'll re-listen to this episode in a few years.
Oh,
that's really funny, Leo.
That's good. Okay. This always rocks when you open up an old manual and they have like ads for games that are about to come out when the game came out, like GTA Vice City and Midnight Club 2. Anyway, there's a funny thing in here. Let me find it.
Is it like a comic book?
No.
I think maybe Metal Gear Solid had a comic book manual. I was looking at one of those recently.
The one I'll always remember is Indiana Jones and the Emperor's Tomb, because it was like this beefy manual that was styled like Indiana Jones's journal, and it had sketches and stuff.
Oh, that's so cool. I mean, when I had limited screen time as a kid, I would just read manuals when I wasn't allowed to play the game. So it was like the Super Smash Bros. Manual just had all the default characters, like all their special moves. And I'd be like, I'm going to memorize these and then I'll be extra good at the game. And it worked.
Even looking at like stat tables was enriching as a kid.
Okay, Blake, we've really been hanging on for this Easter egg.
You all are going to be so mad. I thought the team photo in it, everyone's face, was photoshopped with Max Payne's face or Sam Lake's face. It's not the case, so it really was a complete fucking waste of time.
That's kind of a weird... It's almost like a dream that you would have.
No, there must be...
Where it's like the Remedy team, but everyone is Sam Lake's
Listener,
face.
Please write in. Like, I was so certain about this. That all the faces were replaced.
Yeah, write in with a diagnosis for Blake.
What do you think's going on there? Well, a hot start to a podcast for such a hot game. Here's the first thing that I was just thrilled when booting up this game after downloading the 17 fixes that I needed to get it to start running. This is a flyover New York for the opening cutscene game, in which it joins the hallowed halls of Metal Gear Solid 2 and Parasite Eve, and probably some other games that we'll cover on this podcast at some point. Parasite Eve has a great opening New York flyover.
Have you played Parasite
I was just
Eve?
Like, nope. I've just watched all the cutscenes in it because there were those cool Square Enix CGI cutscenes. I was just immediately so impressed by like use of camera, use of kind of like its ability to tone set in that first couple minutes. Like it really, you're just zooming through the streets. You zoom up a skyscraper. Max Payne is standing there. And then he says, like, they were all dead. And it's like, oh, boy.
I mean,
we're in for a fucking ride.
I think the thing, like, similar to you, Jacob, like, I really recalled nothing about the story of this game or the, like, cutscenes. I remember there was, like, comic shit. Like, but the thing that, like, presented it, stuck in my brain so much was the gameplay. Probably because I used to have to play this with the parental lock on. You remember games used to, computer
games used to be. I saw that in the launcher. Parental options. What is that?
Yeah. It turns most of the cutscenes off.
Oh,
so that's probably why.
Probably because there's like swearing.
Yeah, and there's the lady, she's sucking dick in one of them. That's good stuff.
That's true.
So I don't know if I've ever seen the cutscenes, and I was immediately taken by that open sweep. And then speaking of the team photo I just looked at, please go look at how small this team was, even compared to something coming out around that time, MGS2, which had great cutscenes. Tiny team, and I feel like loading this thing up. I was like, I forgot. This was a technical powerhouse back in the day, and you feel it still.
Yeah, I was really surprised reading reviews of, like, all of them are like, this game plays great, the story's great, but boy, you have never seen a game look like this. Like, they all note how good the graphics are, and it's, there we go, there's the team photo, and all, like, I don't know, 25 people who worked on it. I feel like it's one of those things where, like, with distance, this game does not feel so much better looking than, like, Silent Hill 2 or Metal Gear Solid 2 or other games that came out at that time. And so it's really interesting to have that perspective of the reviews where everyone's like, the way that the gunshots light up the environment, this is shit we've never seen before. It's just like, it's a reason why reading contemporaneous reviews is really useful.
I remember Control as being the first time Remedy was really like pitched to me by our culture and by them as like doing special stuff. But it's kind of that similar DNA in here that I wasn't expecting of like ahead of its time particle physics and explosions and environments feeling a little more interactable than you're used to. Even just the bullets being a physical presence that you have to account for. You have to lead targets a little bit in slow motion, or an enemy will shoot another enemy in the back because their bullets just went there and they responded to that.
It's a funny thing playing this in 2024 with like kind of upscaled graphics or whatever. Like I didn't really download a graphics pack, but it's like it's running at basically 4K, maybe 1080, I don't know. And like in that resolution, you can really tell clearly, like, here's the separation between like the foreground and the backdrops, and like the sky in this way that I kind of love is like this very like VHS grainy kind of gray where you can just see like the tri-colors like butting into each other. But I can absolutely believe that if you were playing this in 2001 on like a 480 monitor or whatever, that kind of magical scan lines thing would happen where like the decreased resolution and like the, you know, the kind of implied detail by your brain would fill it in, and suddenly these New York streets would seem just like, oh my gosh, it's like we're right there. It's like because the, you know, like the kind of the atmosphere, even through my upscaled game, is still, you know, coming through in leaps and bounds.
Jacob, imagine all you will in the theater of the mind, but I don't have to. I was there. And, like, all these memories have been flooding back to me. This is, like, I've been having the time of my life doing this. And I remember, like, my dad back in the day, not so much these days. Well, I don't know. He does have, like, 150 hours in Breath of the Wild. But back in the day, he was, like, a big gamer. But, like, you know, we were playing Max Payne in 2001, so games we had played up to that point were, like, I remember we played a lot of Doom, we played Fate of Atlantis, stuff like that. I remember him talking about Max Payne, like, you're not gonna fucking believe this, you little kid. Like, you're not gonna... And, like, back in the day, the way... yeah, the way I consumed so many video games back in the day was just sitting beside him, watching him play. And I remember Max Payne and us both being like, how does it go slow? Like, it was the coolest shit. And, like, that was the time of a lot of cool games coming out. Like, we were playing No One Lives Forever back then, Mafia 1. I was playing a lot, which was like, holy shit, it's a whole world and you can explore. And I remember it feeling like I was literally like there was an entire planet out there, and I'm sure it was actually the tiniest little open world comparatively. But Max Payne hit our little household like a fucking cannonball. Like, my dad was like, Blake, you ain't gonna believe this shit. I'm 6 years old. I can't believe anything, much less the concept of, like, people moving on a computer. I can barely breathe on my own. And, like, to your point, like, I remember it feeling like a huge fucking deal.
I think one of the most pleasant surprises of this, it's like, if you read kind of their original pitch, it's funny because they were still kind of explaining the concept of a third person action game, where they're like, it's gonna be, their phrasing was like, it's gonna be like Lara Croft, but the camera won't suck, is kind of how they explained it, which is, I guess it is, but like, you really do not have to do much work to, like, ease yourself back into the experience of playing this game. You know, sometimes if you're turning back the clock 24 years, it is like, you have to remember, like, oh, games used to control in a certain way. It's like, this game controls basically the same as Max Payne 3, which controls more or less the same as, you know, every other Rockstar game now. And it's like, there are things that feel a little clunky. There are definitely, like, improvements that have been made, but in terms of just, like, jumping in and starting to do third-person shooting, it's like, they got it. It works.
I mean, yeah, I would go so far as to say, for, like, a 22-year-old third-person 3D shooter, it feels great. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think it, like, holds up so well that I would say it feels good to play. I bet on controller it would feel like dog shit, but on mouse and keyboard, like, I don't think it's just like, hey, they kind of got it. It's like, no, I think they nailed it so hard you feel it two decades later.
Yeah, I think the only thing that didn't age well or age weirdly is the fact that you get, like, all of your tools, your combat tools, thing, and you never get any more. You get different weapons that feel pretty similar, but don't change the game in any meaningful way. And for a while, I thought that would get old, and it maybe did a little, but when the combat was challenging, I thought it really was holding up, because you quick save right before the encounter, and then it feels almost like super hot of, like, having to memorize where the enemies are, know when to lead targets, when to hide behind and wait for the reload and stuff like that. There is depth to the basic tools you have.
Super hot is not the comparison I was going to bring up. Mine was Hotline Miami, but I think both work. Sure. Like, in terms of, like,
similar,
you can really play this game on a room by room basis and feel like you're solving, like, little micro puzzles.
Yeah, I think one of the things that was really striking to me, having only played Max Payne 3 before, is how inaccurate the guns are, but in a very intentional way, where it's like, Max Payne 3 has, you know, it's got that tiny Rockstar, like, dot reticule in the middle, and it's like, your first shot is always going to go right there. And so it's like, if you're trying to headshot guys, especially if you're playing on a PC, it's like, it's pretty easy to just click on dudes' heads and have that happen. And in this, I was surprised, and then almost immediately was like, oh, I understand why they did this, where it's like, you've got a pretty wide, you know, trajectory that your shots can go in, which means that I'm actually running into rooms like bam 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 bam, you know, holding two guns and, like, laying on the trigger way more than I did in three, where the guns were more accurate, and it makes it feel much more John Woo or The Matrix, where it's like, they're just shots going everywhere, there are things kind of hitting pieces of the environment. It does not feel like you're you know, like a super skilled military guy who can put the bullet exactly where he wants. You're just kind of, like, destroying everything.
Yeah, tiny detail I love is one level where this guy rolls out at you, and I just spray at him with the dual Ingrams, and behind where he was, panicking to get the shot off, I hit a bunch of kegs behind him, and they're all, like, leaking liquid. It feels constructed to, like, show off how advanced the destruction is.
For sure. No, that was total. I mean, that was just some fucking, like, Naughty Dog shit. Remember when everyone lost their mind because in Uncharted 4 you shoot the bag of flour and then it slowly deflates? It's like, that's happening here, man. Yep. All right, let's back up a little bit. Let's kind of start talk about like the setting of this game. So it starts in New York at the very end of the story, I'm assuming, or at least kind of in media res, the midpoint. Max Payne is standing on a skyscraper. He says they're all dead. Then immediately you go all the way back to kind of the beginning of it. When Max comes home to find his family as his wife and infant child killed by some junkies who broke into his house, because I did not realize this is also kind of a drug game. Oh, it's yeah. Like everyone's kind of whacked out on
Valkyr.
What is it called?
Valkyr, baby.
Valkyr.
V.
A drug that makes you go crazy and kill people.
It's kind of like PCP, really.
Yeah, it feels Valkyr is a very like comic book style it's thing green. But it's like he just yeah he goes to the DEA. Apparently at some point they considered putting like super soldier enemy types in this game, like there are ideas of having like mutated enemies, and then they were like, no, I guess we shouldn't do that.
One of the things that's really funny about Valkyr is like users of Valkyr are annoying about it in the same way like dudes who smoke weed a lot are annoying about it, because they're spray painting like Valkyr all over everything. You know?
I love Valkyr. Just the tags that just say the word Valkyr.
Yeah, it's like dudes you went to high school with who would write like 420 on the lunch trays and shit. It's like, wow, you could just.
It's really
it
funny to think
cool
about being on drugs and just spray painting PCP on a wall and being like, fuck
it
yeah.
It seems like a joke, but in certain communities around Minneapolis, you do see opioids spray painted on the walls.
Do you really?
Environmental storytelling.
I didn't think so.
Cut off their limbs.
When I was at my worst, I would just go around spray painting beer with like seven E's across entire buildings.
Whiskey. I knew Max Payne's family was dead. If you know one thing about Max Payne, you know that he's got a dead family. I thought that it might happen, I don't know, halfway through this game.
Nah, man.
But it is the first level that you're just, it's like the first shots that you shoot in the game after the tutorial are like killing the dudes who killed your wife and
you
baby.
Get a second you pistol in your baby's room and dual wield the first guy, and then you bullet dodge into the room your wife's body's in and kill a second guy.
You need an inciting incident. Why not put it in the first 1 minute of your game? Get the bullshit out of the way. Like,
it is, I mean, he is the ultimate dead wife guy. This is also, you know, as we've talked about before, like, the epitome of the kind of idea of fridging, of like, do we learn anything about his wife? Nah, man, she's dead. That's all we need to know about her.
Yeah, I feel silly that Max Payne 3 is, like, working with what is such kind of a relic, or at least a really simplified version of this trope, because it's a game from so long ago, and it's like...
Mm-hmm.
Going for the mood of having this happen more than like really exploring it happening.
Yeah, but even, I mean, even in that first level, I was reminded, have y'all seen The Fugitive, the Harrison Ford movie? Well, first of all, great movie, good stuff. Second, he has a scene where some guy comes in and kills his wife or whatever, and it's like the camera work in these scenes, they're like, it's just, As we talked about with Metal Gear Solid 2 and some of the other games we've covered on the show, it's like, it is cool how intentional the camera work is, even in these very, you know, kind of basic environments of, like, they're using a lot of Dutch angles, they're doing a lot of, like, swirling around Max to show his inner turmoil. For as good as the game looks for 2001, still a fairly simple looking game, but like, it's cool to see how much mileage they get out of those camera moves. And then you have the comic books, which work perfectly. Like, I have zero complaints about the usage of the comic books in this game. You know, it's like, so these are the kind of longer story scenes. And part of the reason that they're in there, as they've said, is like, it's easier to make comic books than like fully animated cutscenes, and especially if they were changing story elements around, they could also change the comic books and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But like, there are enough panels that it never gets boring looking at them. the imagery is really cool. Like, the use of kind of, like, lighting and props and whatever in the panels is neat. And maybe this can be our kind of intro to talking about it. The voice acting in this game fucking rocks.
Yes.
And, like, not just James McCaffrey, yep, but, like, everyone is just delivering.
The acting and the writing and the art on those little cutscenes are so great because you'll have bonus ones of, like, I'll interact with this radio, interact with this TV, and get this non-essential little bit of flavor. And those feel like rewards. Those feel like exciting things to discover that you could have missed.
Sam Lake, he's talked about this a lot. Sam Lake, the, you know, creative head at Remedy these days, who's written.
Also, Max Payne head.
Right, and also Max Payne's head, and also the character in Alan Wake 2. Blah, blah, blah. He's talked a bit about how either after this game or after Max Payne 2, he traveled to America and, like, went to school for script writing. But it is fascinating coming to this game, and you can tell, like, he's still learning, but there are some banger lines.
Yeah,
like, he's one of those, like, really gifted writers who, once he had the formal training, he would go on to make the games he did. But, like, what is the fucking line in this game where he's like, it's fear that gives men wings? I was like, that's great. Like, it does, that's such a good line.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about angels, but it's fear that gives men wings. There are so many. I mean, it's like, what's really fun about this is that it is kind of a, I wouldn't go as far to say it's a satire, because it's clearly like an homage, but it's kind of like, it's writing noir like people think noir is written, almost even more so than noir is actually written. It's kind of like someone doing an impression of it, but it's such a skillful impression that, like, it just really works, and you do get so many of these just, like, one-liners that hit. One of my favorites that I wrote down was, like, you're at a crime scene or something, and you can kind of click on, like, oh, is this evidence? And Max just says, collecting evidence had gotten old a few hundred bullets back.
Yeah.
Or it's just like, he doesn't give a shit, man. He doesn't need to collect evidence. He's just going to kill all these guys.
I forgot that, like, obviously about Max Payne 3, Max is going through a lot. But, like, he's got a heart of gold somewhere deep down. I forgot in this first game he's kind of a piece of shit. Like, he kind of sucks. Like, he's got...
One line I wrote down is when you're chasing that dude past the train and you get him cornered, you're kicking his ass and he says, police brutality! And Max goes, yeah, I rate pretty high on that.
He's a piece of shit. We're interrupting this broadcast to let you know that Something Rotten is dead.
We're doing what?
Starting immediately, Something Rotten is done. Finished. Gone. Bon voy freaking Oz, Jacob. This podcast is now a Leo Vader fan cast. Every week, we're covering all the latest, hottest, and juiciest news about the Minneapolis movie maker. And if you've seen him, you best believe there's plenty of hot news to talk about.
We're, like, as much as I love him, we're not going to do that. But if you like Leo so much, have you considered signing up to Nebula?
To what now?
Nebula. Nebula is this wonderful streaming service run by creators with exclusive videos, podcasts, shows, the whole nine yards. I'm on there. Leo Vader is on there. Blake, you're on there.
Is that what these checks are from?
My God. Okay, here's the deal. When you sign up to Nebula using our code, nebula.tv/somethingrotten, you get immediate access to early and ad-free episodes of this show and exclusive bonus podcasts featuring guests such as Noah Caldwell-Gervais, Gareth Damian Martin, and Chris Bratt. You also get access to Nebula's entire catalog of creators and content, and your money goes directly towards us making the show better.
Do you think Leo feels about me the way I feel about him?
I think a better question is, does Leo know you exist?
I've literally pooped in his bathroom. I would sure hope so.
I think it's like it is amazing how instantly James McCaffrey, the voice through all three games who died recently, he's like, you don't feel like he's any less keyed in on the character in this than three. It's just like he has it. He has Max Payne. You could call it kind of a, like, a monotone delivery or whatever, because he does not, like, go up and down a lot in how he delivers lines, but, like, there is a difference between a good monotone and a bad monotone, and, like, he is still able to just, like, wring a lot out of his pretty deadpan deliveries of these lines.
I agree, for the most part. I also think, like, if you compare this to his later performances as Max and God, what is his character's name in Alan Wake 2?
Alex Casey?
Obviously, it's a night and day difference in terms of his performance. Like, I do think a lot of his delivery is a little stilted in this. But, like, what I like is seeing him at the same time you see Remedy finding their foothold as, like, the kinds of games they want to make, because this is their second game. He is finding the type of actor, like, he's finding his voice at the same time. So it's, like, for all the parts that sound awkward, it rocks to, like, feel like he is coming into his own. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In the same way I feel like the developer is, like, figuring out who they want to be as an entity.
What is their first game? I'm looking it up. Oh, Death Rally.
Death Rally.
Of course.
That's right.
What
yeah.
is that?
Death Rally. That rules. Yeah. It's it's what, top-down car combat cool. racer.
You could get it on iOS in 2011. I'm sure that you cannot do that anymore.
Also, like, don't forget, this game was produced by 3D Realms, and working on it was Duke Nukem's creators, George Broussard and all them. Pretty cool stuff. And Scott Miller. That's a weird lineage with this game.
There is, so you talked before about kind of visiting New York to do script writing or screenwriting school. They did, apparently, visit New York, take thousands of photos for making this game, because, of course, Remedy is not an American studio. They're based in...
Espoo, Finland.
Finland, baby. A thing that I liked is that apparently they had two ex-NYPD officers as bodyguards with them for the whole photography trip.
Hilarious.
Blake, this is your chance to talk about pre-Giuliani New York, baby, back when it was seedy and good.
Yeah, I mean, well, this would have been the last gasp of what people like to refer to as real New York or whatever. I mean, no, I moved here in 2024. I mean, like, playing this season has just been like reliving so many memories of me and my dad. And it's like, we were obsessed with this game. My dad is obsessed with cities. My dad is obsessed with New York, even though he has not been here since the 80s, which is, he like literally... by the way, Jacob, late 90s were not pre-Giuliani.
Okay, well.
It sounded right.
they were considerably post-Giuliani, but my dad has...
The New York that they're referencing is that right. version of New York.
Yeah, it's very funny that Max is like, oh, I'm a detective in Hell's Kitchen, which is like one of the most expensive, nicest neighborhoods in Manhattan now. like it's actually funnier that Forspoken's character lives in Hell's Kitchen and she's like, oh, it's so fucking dangerous here, and it's like literally the safest place possibly in New York is Hell's Kitchen, but it sounds dangerous. I think this game informed a lot of like what I thought cities were in an interesting way, because I was so young and mm-hmm. impressionable, and like I still, when I play it, feel like this is what I wish cities were, despite the fact it would be insane. Like, it's, I don't even, it's like this completely undescribable feeling I get when I'm playing it. Like, I've been trying to like verbalize it in my head. It's like, what is it in this? And it's obviously just some amount of nostalgia, but like playing it, I can feel the way this game influenced like so many parts of my life, and that's also because of like my close relationship with my dad and like us having very similar interests in games and cities, and him taking me to cities when I was a little kid, like Chicago, and us just being so obsessed with buildings. But there's some part of me that is like, I think, going to be forever disappointed that the New York and Max Payne isn't real except for in the games. Like, I thought that's what the streets looked like. I don't even think I thought the sun shined in New York when I was a little kid. The streets are insane. There is no grid plan here in Max Payne. The buildings don't make any sense. They're just these weird caverns with ugly wood paneling and carpet, but that's like, I wish every building in New York,
I mean, for
like
what
that.
It's worth, this like, is what Republican politicians still think New York is like, you know, a sunless place.
Like, yeah. Yeah, like it is a vision of a New York that once existed, but like the version I want of it is the video game version. Like, it's like there's no part of me that's like, I wish I lived in New York in the 70s. It's like, that sounds like a fucking nightmare. And all the people who are like, New York was alive back then, I'm like, I think it wasn't technically. Like, I think definitionally it was dead. But I long for the video game version, and there's like a melancholy while I play this game that the city I moved to is not the city in the game. It's like such a bizarre feeling. I don't even know like what to do with. Because it's like,
there is so much to the atmosphere of it that I think makes yeah. that hit extra hard. Like, jumping out a window from inside a building to the cold outside, and you see Max's breath and the like soundscape changes.
Yeah,
it's that still holds up perfectly, that little feeling. And I just think there is something magic to the decision to make every little thing interactable. It's like, a lot of developers at the time and now don't put in the effort because who cares whether you can flush a toilet and watch the water go down and then back up. But it being like every fucking thing I see in Max Payne, I'm like, well, I got to go press F on that and see if something happens. And it almost always does. And that mm-hmm. just makes it feel like you're in a play so much better than moving through what are sometimes a little bare of corridors, sometimes don't visually look like that much. It really does something.
I mean, and it's so many things coming together to create that, right? Like, it is the world. It is the sound of just, like, the wind outside and the view of, like endless walls of brick with white snow is very evocative. But it's also the storytelling. It's all the comic books. It's the neon lights inside and yeah. outside.
The neon light that says so bar. And you're like, ah, the bar's yeah, through yeah, yeah. there.
But it's all coming together that, like, if you look at screenshots of Max Payne these days, it looks so rudimentary and kind of goofy. But, like, when you're actually in the moment, like, it does feel like a real place. And that's why, like, hearing you say all that, Leo, it's like, maybe that's why I play this. And I'm like, this is what I wish the city I lived in was, because it does feel real in those moments. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's like, it doesn't feel real as in this is a place that I could hop on a plane and go to. But it just right. feels very internally consistent, you know, where it's like it doesn't ever betray its own reality. I feel like one of the like surreal moments of this that I just like I laughed at but I also loved is there's the scene where like you know, you're chasing a gangster and he gets in a car and he peels out and turns a corner and there's one other car on the road and it's a giant gas truck and they like crash into each other and the gas truck flips over and it's like there are only two cars on the whole street. It's the gangster and the gas truck and they collide and the gas truck flips over, but it's like it works, you know. That's, you believe it.
I look, that's something that would probably happen in New York, is there are two cars on the road and somehow an explosion happens. You cannot believe what these roads are like. One thing worth noting, you jump on a train. The majority of this game takes place, at least the section we played, takes place in the Bronx, which is the borough north of Manhattan. The train you hop on, I can't remember the number, that you subway surf, mm-hmm. chasing after a guy, it doesn't go to the Bronx.
Wow. Sorry, got to take yeah, it down a number grade.
Just thought I'd point that out.
That's
just
why this version of New York is so out. Much better.
Well, it seems that public transportation is right. better there. Trains go further.
Another world building, while we're just talking about like the environment of this, it's like going outside is always really fun. The way that they kind of connect levels by having these just like pipes that you're walking across is always kind of entertaining. But my favorite part is later on you're going through a church. And then there's like a locked door or something, but you're basically like tiptoeing around the outside architecture of the church. And it's like big blizzard and there's really like no visibility. But it's like one of my favorite things about the Dark Souls games is like when it gives you a building and you're like, can I go in the front door? And it's like, no. And then you have to like climb a ladder and go across the roof and kind of interact with it in these really weird ways. And this is the same where it's like, they have proved to me that this is not just an interior, that the church actually has an outside too, and it's in the weather and everything, because they make me go out there and walk through it, and suddenly the interior of the church feels more legitimate too, because like I've learned that there's an totally. outside.
And I think one other thing to the vibe and the atmosphere is like the way that you're moving through moments from small moment to small moment that makes it feel kind of real, not just overhearing the conversations, but like walking up on a guard who's watching TV and you can just watch the whole TV show they're watching without interrupting. Or my favorite one where you see a guard playing a slot machine, which is really interactable. You can walk up and play the slot machine, and he loses, and he gets mad and shoots it, and it explodes. If you sit there and wait and watch it, that's what happens.
Did you watch the TV show that was extremely Twin Peaks, where there was
the
like
flamingo.
Yeah, a room with red curtains, and there's a flamingo like speaking.
Was it
in reverse?
Was it Night Springs?
I don't think explicitly.
I don't think it said it, but it certainly had. Well, because Night Springs is more Twilight Zone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But this was like extremely Twin Peaks. And what struck me is it's like it was very, you know, very clearly like an homage, a tribute. But also it was well done. I mean, it was like barely animated. They just had a thing, but like the narration was like, oh, this is like creepy, you know. It's like it's doing it well. It's not just like ha ha ha, let's laugh at the show that's on TV right now. It was like they like Twin Peaks and they are putting it in their game in a way that feels like it kind of honors what Twin Peaks is.
Yeah, and very Remedy, very early Remedy DNA to have put that spotlight and effort into just highlighting writing for a minute.
I feel like something Remedy has a lot of other game developers sometimes miss is when they want to do these like very overt references to things, is they do understand the reference super well. Like Kojima just sometimes is like, I like this thing, here's reference, and it's like, okay, thanks bro, like got it. Like Remedy feels like they're coming from such a place of understanding when they do shit like this that like it's easier to like appreciate it more and actually want to engage with some of the references in their stuff.
Along that line, I wrote down, look, I'm a big Peanuts head. I love Charles Schultz. I love all those little rascals. Baseball Bat Boy, which is a cartoon that exists in this world and actually gets like centered in a level, has like one of the best Charlie Brown impressions I've ever heard, where they have someone doing the voice of Baseball Bat Boy, and it's like, it is dead on Charlie Brown.
It's so good, dude. Jacob, when we play Max Payne 2, you're going to lose your mind when you get to the Baseball Bat Boy stuff in that game.
Can't wait for more Baseball Bat Boy. So the story of this game is for a while, so it's like Max's family is dead. We jump forward several years. He's joined the DEA because his wife's killers were on drugs, and then he's gone undercover in the mafia to kind of find out how they're trafficking, which I don't think is really... he certainly never seems undercover in this game, right? Like, you just kill everyone you meet. Right?
He seems deep undercover because the cops are after him.
Well, that's true, but aren't the cops after him just because they think that he killed a guy? Like, would it matter if he was undercover or not?
That's how deep he is undercover. The cops don't even know. It's like The Departed.
Oh, I guess that makes sense. I thought that... I basically thought that the cops just believed he had gone rogue. But it makes sense because they think he's part of the mafia. Okay, I retract my complaint.
His cop friend dies in the beginning in the subway. Remember, that was probably would have been his one point of contact.
Right,
somewhere in The Departed. How they have one point of contact, they can't share the information. I just watched The Departed a couple of weeks ago. At least that is how I have justified some of the wonky storytelling in this game.
I think you're totally right in that the story is a little bit jarring because the first, I don't know, five levels are just Max meets someone who's not an enemy and then they are immediately killed, like within the same cutscene. It happens like four times, and so it's kind of hard keeping track of like, okay, he meets a subway station guy and he's immediately killed, and that seems to not matter. But then his cop friend getting immediately killed, that one did matter, and like does have story ramifications, and it's a little hard to keep track of. But I wasn't too upset about it. I think that the voices in this game, other than Max Payne, are doing the most New York guy impression you possibly could, and Italian variants on that and various other kind of stereotypes that you would have, and like in the way that this is just like a noir pastiche homage, whatever, it works for me 100%.
Bro, this is that Remedy, this is that reference chip paying off. The Bronx, big Italian population, and you can see, you know, they really
honored that.
Those voices, certainly sensitive to the Italian culture.
Let's see. Are there any kind of individual moments or whatever from the first levels that y'all want to talk about?
I definitely liked the bullet dodging into your wife's room. There was a great detail in the kind of brothel hotel thing where you walk in on a guy who's just sitting on a chair and he has to stand up and go to a locker and grab a gun from it and then he starts shooting at you.
Uh-huh.
Which felt pretty advanced.
Did you like in that in the everything being interactive in the brothel, you can click on the bed and it just starts vibrating.
It vibrates so hard it like moves 3 feet to the side.
That's good stuff.
Here's a weird thing about the shoot dodge. I'm used to in Max Payne 3, he really jumps. In this, it kind of feels more like a slide.
He kind of falls.
Yeah, like he doesn't really have much like forward propulsion when he's doing it.
It took a while to wrap my mind around it. Like, it did not feel great at first. Did you have issues with it, too?
Mostly because of not being able to shoot, like, as you're getting yourself up, which I think they fixed in Max Payne 3.
Oh, sure.
Where that feels a little better. But yeah. This one, you kind of have to time it so that you get your last shot off before you get up and can't shoot for a second.
Yeah, I mean, so it's like the slow-mo, I feel like we should talk about, because it's like, it's the primary, it is the reason that this game is not just running through hallways clicking on guys' heads. You know, it's kind of like the one shooting modifier that exists in here. And it's cool. They know that their game looks good in slow motion because of how many things register bullet impacts and whatever. It is like, it's always struck me as kind of weird, even in Max Payne 3, where it's like, well, you're slowing down time, but your character also moves slower. So it's not like you're really able to dodge bullets more effectively. But I guess you can shoot faster than them in slow motion. I'm kind of like...
I think you do move slightly faster than enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you do have various speed advantages over them. But it's not a thing where you can, like, run around in slow-mo. Like, I think the idea is, like, you need to be in the air if you're hitting that. Because you have the option, right, to slow it down and then move around, but it feels superfluous.
Well, see, that's interesting because I use that option pretty frequently.
The bullet time without dodging?
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, where it's like, if I know a bunch of guys are around a corner, I activate it right before I come around the corner. And then turn it, and so then while they're reacting, I'm already kind of shooting at them.
Oh, weird. I mean, so like my approach to that would just be dive from out of the corner, but you like just run around the corner.
Yeah, kind of. Leo, how are you using it?
Yeah, essentially, and that's you know, avoids the second of not being able to shoot, the kind of punishment you get for dodging if you don't kill everybody.
Sure.
At the same time,
sure.
The dodge almost becomes more of like a reaction tool, which I really like it for that. Of like, oh, an enemy sprung up on me. I quick do this so they can't hit me. They can't get a shot on me, but I have 1 second to take them out and everybody else. I think that's a really fun gameplay.
The second I see any enemy, I'm dodging. And then I'm standing up, I'm dodging the opposite direction. Like, I'm constantly just dodging back and forth every which way.
Respect.
I'm never on my feet shooting that gun.
How about that? I mean, and your game probably looks much cooler being played than mine, because it seems like that's how it wants to be played, is you
right.
Flying all over the place.
How about this advanced gameplay technique? You guys ever do this? Crouching?
No.
You can't crouch walk. You can only crouch in place. So you only ever would, like, crouch behind cover to reload or something. And that, you know, any game like this that has seemingly simple combat, I like to try and find the ways to make it a little more complicated, make sure I'm using all the moves to make it be, you know,
right.
As rich as possible. And that is one I have tried to mix in, is crouching in place. It's nearly useless, but it's another button to press, baby.
Okay, that was going to be my question. What is it?
Sometimes you really do crouch behind cover and it helps you.
That's true.
Because
that's
the bullets are so physical.
I think it's interesting how many combat encounters in this are basically like you and bad guys are on opposite sides of an open door. And it's just like, how do you get through there? You know, it's kind of, it is like presenting a problem in a very just kind of like, here's the thing. And like, the bad guy's AI is very programmed to kind of like they play cheap
there are often times where you will walk into a room and there is just a dude in the back corner with a shotgun who will shoot you immediately. And it's like, okay, next time you know that that guy's standing there, but even knowing he's there, like, presents kind of a, you know, it's like, okay, well, how am I going to do this? If I come in facing that guy, then I'm not going to be looking at these other guys. And so it is like, because combat is very deadly, because, like, you will go down really fast, especially to shotguns or whatever, you do have to kind of, like, work through your like, target acquisition order and stuff before you even start fighting.
I like that there are grenades and stuff. That kind of mixes it up in a fun way. There's that one part where enemies get sent up the stairs at you and you know they're coming, and I kind of pre-fired a grenade. So as they ran up, they got blown away by it.
You like those moments where you open a door and you just hear thunk and a grenade like drops at your feet and you're like, okay, guess I'm starting over.
Yes.
Do you remember back in the day, like, games with, like, kind of interesting AI, that the enemies would sometimes make mistakes and it was like not a planned thing? This happened to me earlier playing this game. And I'm like, games, they don't make them like they used to. An enemy threw a grenade, but the way he was moving, it hit a wall and bounced back at him and killed him.
Great.
All right. That's great.
I was like, that's not a planned thing. Games would never do that these days.
I think games
like they used to.
do that these days.
What games?
No, name fucking 10 games that do
okay,
that.
Okay,
9
games.
Even. I'll give you 9.
Yeah, you know what? Name 20.
Okay. I'll get back to you on that next episode. Let's... Max Payne's face. It is Sam Lake.
So good.
It's just a photo of Sam Lake. It's more clear playing it in 1080 than it ever would have been at the time.
My dad used to call him, we didn't know who Sam Lake was back then. My dad used to call him a guy who looks like he smelled bad cheese, which was not the punchiest name in the world, but that is what he called him.
I knew that he basically had that expression while playing. I did not know that he had a different death face. And, like, seeing him get blown up and his face just instantly change into, like, sad Sam Lake who got blown up was such a treat and kind of makes dying, like, feel okay.
I felt like all the faces in the cutscenes early on were striking me as, like, AI-generated from MySpace profile pictures of, like, they're kind of doing cute faces and cute poses in a way that doesn't quite fit all the time. And, again, wouldn't have been as clear before this modern era. HDR.
Hey, interesting thing to bring up. Do you feel like one of the mods we installed that makes the visuals a little better is using some form of AI to upscale things?
Yes. Oh. I think that is absolutely the case.
I have taken, like, in looking around, you can especially see it on, like, newspapers or, like, flyers around.
Yeah.
Take a good look at it. You can feel the AI-ness of it.
It's trying to pull detail from a texture that had no detail, and so this is a lot of fan upscale mods are using, kind of, they just kind of feed all the textures into, like, an image up reser, and then they spit it back out.
But that's doesn't change the goofiness of the faces too much, I wouldn't think, right?
I think the faces are just photographs still of, you know, people working on the game or whatever.
Yeah, right. It kind of does give the feel that they're all Remedy employees, because there's, like, mob bosses that look like
they are
babyface 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
They literally
are. That's adorable.
That literally just, that's Remedy and their friends and family, like, doing most, if not all, of the, like, faces and comic book stuff.
Which only struck me as weird during the dick-sucking scene. I was like, who did they get to do that?
I wonder if that's that guy's girlfriend or whatever. Well, also, Leo, I don't think she was actually sucking that guy's dick. In my version, she was.
Like, no, she was absolutely sucking his dick.
I meant, she was in the position.
They took the photo?
Yeah, I don't think the woman was giving a blowjob in real IRL, guys. It wasn't an IRL BJ.
Can we get to the bottom of this? Can we call up Sam Lake and ask?
Yeah, let me email Remedy PR and say, what was that guy getting sloppy toppy? You think that would be good for my
IRL
career?
BJ, infrared Lyndon B. Johnson. What a concept.
That mobster, it makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
I completely broke
IRL BJ. The mobster who was previously getting the BJ has this monologue where he describes guys who are about to get in a fight and then they settle it with Street Fighter, and he's very upset with this. And this is, like,
Another early Remedy thing that they just keep doing, and I know there are more lines about video games that we haven't gotten to yet, but, like, there are a lot of very winky lines at the idea that this is a video game, that all the characters exist in a video game world. Later on, the guy who's beating up Max while you're tied to a chair says, "I love watching cartoons. Cartoon violence is a fascinating thing." And I was just like, that's just Remedy acknowledging that this game is basically a cartoon, and, you know, that they are just a slightly more advanced version of, like, Tom and Jerry.
Hey, gonna be more about that later in the game.
I know.
I just checked the credits, and it's fun. You can find the graphic novel models and flip back and forth to be like, oh, that's what that dude did on this game. Except for Candy Dawn, who played herself.
Huh.
Wonder who that was. I think that might be Blowjob Lady.
Who is Mona one of the employees?
So it doesn't say who is who. It just says the name. So,
well,
it's,
I imagine,
oh,
there are only,
look,
like, two women in the whole game.
Oh, yeah. Well, no. We're going to encounter another.
Wow.
There's at least three.
Okay. I can't figure
it out. I'll be honest. I don't know Finnish names so well. To know which ones are guys or girls.
Sure. That's reasonable. I will say, Mona's introduction, who I know it continues
Mona
to be
Sachs.
A character. I thought that cutscene ruled. I love the comic panels of them both holding and pointing guns at each other. I think that her voice actor is also very good. I love that there's a line where her and Max have a drink. He says, "Don't slip me a Mickey." And then she immediately does. Like, she drugs him in that drink that he said, "Don't drug me on."
That's so you know what happened.
Yeah.
When he starts to pass out.
Yeah, you're just like, is he a lightweight? Is he not good at drinking?
Tired?
Let's see. Before we get to the nightmare section, which I want to talk about, a couple more little lines. Someone acknowledges the Max Payne being a weird name almost immediately. Where he says, "I'm Max Payne," and they say, "Ha ha, Payne to the max." And he, like, rolls his eyes at that.
Which I believe is also something Egghead says in Disco Elysium.
Payne to the max, yeah! there is the guy who you need to let you into the laundry, and he has a password, and they're like, "What's the password?" And he's like, "John what?" The guy's like, "Oh, John Woo." It's like, all right, there's another.
Hell,
they're being very, very upfront with their influences.
Max Payne himself says, "I made, like, Chow Yun Fat," which to me is, like, a fun detail of, like, oh, he's just a fan, and that's why he's doing the dive thing. He literally just is like, I want to be like that movie.
Yeah, when you go back to Max Payne's apartment, he's got, like, stacks of DVDs.
Yes. The other thing, I'm sorry to keep bringing back to the BJ guy, but another great detail was that when he stands up and he's shooting at you and running around, his pants are around his ankles, 3D modeled pants, as he shuffles around shooting at you.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Did you find the guy taking a shit?
No.
Oh, yeah. Leo looked so upset that you didn't find the guy taking a shit.
It's in, like, the last level we played. If you go in the bathroom, you hear a guy humming. He's in one of the stalls taking a shit. He stands up. Tries to shoot you, but he also has his pants around his ankles. And he has American flag red, white, and blue boxers on. It rocks. It's so cool. One more thing about the friends and family in here.
Yes.
Sam Lake's last name is, believe it or not Lake. It's Jarvie. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. There are multiple Jarvies in here, which I believe are his parents and maybe siblings, which... Fun touch. Isn't that cool?
That's
Isn't
cute.
That fucking cool?
Very
I know. They don't make them like they used to, dude. They
On another note don't. Along the good Italian representation we have, the Russian car that crashes into the gas tanker, the license plate says vodka.
And that's good Italian representation?
Well, it's along the same lines, but for Russians getting their hat in the ring, so to speak. Their Ushanka in the ring.
There you go.
I looked up Mona Sachs actor. Of course, the first answer is Mila Kunis, who played her in the movie. But
of course, which I did watch on TV in high school. I recorded it on her DVR.
I've never seen that. I've never seen it.
Well, Blake, bonus episode. That's what we're doing.
That's
right. Carol Kyriakos is the, I think, the, like, face model. She's one of the dancers in Nightless Night in Alan Wake 2.
Wow.
It literally, she has two. She has three actor credits. Max Payne, a short called Loud and Deep, which came out in 2013, and then Alan Wake 2. I assume she's staff, though I can't find her. And then the voice of her in this is Julia Murney, who is an American actress and singer. She played Elphaba in Wicked. So, there you go.
I looked it up. It does not appear Carol worked at Remedy, so it must have just been
I hope listeners are enjoying this in record investigation into who played who.
This is why games need to come with manuals again, so we can quickly check the credit. Can you imagine if a game came with a manual now? It'd be the size of like a dictionary,
yep.
Like a Naughty Dog game, because just to get all the credits right. In there.
Oh, here is on maybe my favorite single bit of the game is there is a guy setting up a bomb on a wall. You shoot him, the bomb blows up, nothing really happens. You go to a door. The door is locked, and then the entire wall around the door falls down. I mean, it is a straight-up Looney Tunes gag, but, like, the timing is so good. Like, I laughed out loud at just, like, the execution of it.
Me too. Genuinely surprising.
Can we talk about the mobster who's an occult member really quick?
Yeah. The boss?
I lost the thread on that dude seemingly as quickly as the game did. I was so... I remember this level as a kid because the boss fight was so fucking hard
it
for
is
me
hard.
As a kid.
Well, the only note I took from that is when he's ranting, he says, I'm the wolf. I'm the big bad Fenris wolf. He says, I'm Mr. Beast.
And he says, we're going to knock over the biggest chain of dominoes.
I believe he also pronounces Cthulhu in a way I'd never heard. And also he's like bringing up real... He's bringing up all these occult books, and he's like, Necronomicon. I was like, bro, that's just fiction, right? That's just H.P. Lovecraft. Like, we don't gotta worry about that one. But anyway,
that's a good ass point.
Like, it's chill, bro. It's like Frankenstein's not real either, believe it or not. But what is going on with that fucking guy?
I don't know.
I don't know. I love that. I mean, I really think that it was just kind of like, and this is to the game's credit. They're like, he just needs a thing. He can't be another mobster because we fought a lot of mobsters. And so this level takes place in a church, but I guess it would be weird for him to just be a normal religious guy. So instead, we get to read all these little books and get, like, you know, Max Payne's take on all the occult nonsense that he's reading. And then we get fucking scenery chewing. Of, like, this guy howling at, you know, at how he is Mr. Beast. And then you shoot him with a bunch of Uzis until he dies.
Yes. And that also had my favorite line I wrote down from Max, which is, nothing is a cliche when it's happening to you.
That is a really good line. One of the things that I really like about Max Payne's characterization is he really describes himself as a product of his environment near constantly, where it's just like whenever he's talking about his situation, he's kind of like, my only option was to do this, or like the city had made me into this or whatever, where he like, it doesn't seem like he really views himself as a person with a lot of agency. He's just kind of like, this was the situation that I was put in. This is the only thing I'm good at. So, like, this is what I'm going to do. And it's like, it is fascinating to have this hard-boiled character who is just kind of like, I'm a cog in a machine. You know, that, like, whatever I'm doing, it's just because of the, you know, sequence of events that's led up to this point.
I mean, he's a real-ass NYPD-er. Making up excuses to kill drug addicts that are all bullshit and fake. Like, that's hey, brother.
And the start of the
New
next
right
part
there.
Of the second part of the game is him going like, I started that whole thing it was a mistake. Like, I was going after the wrong people. Whoops.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is admirable, and I only know the first half of this game in Max Payne 3, but it's like a character who fucks up nonstop. You know, like, most games, when they give you an objective and you accomplish that objective, it's kind of like, oh, well, because someone lied to you, the game's not actually over yet. Or, like, there's another situation beyond your control. But, like, Max Payne games are pretty careful to say, like, he made a bad call. That guy that you were playing, you were not doing the right thing there.
I think this goes back to a point I was making earlier. Like, having kind of forgot the plot of this game over the years, is like, I forgot that Max Payne's also not really like a sympathetic character in here. He is making a lot of mistakes, but he seems to like not give a shit. Like, he's a more nihilistic character than I remembered him being, compared to Max Payne 3, where he has the whole redemption arc, right? Like, the game is more like nihilistic than I remembered. Like, Max as a person is just like, whether it's right or wrong, I'm just fucking killing anyone in my path right now. It's like,
yeah, which almost works better than in Max Payne 3, because it's hard to have a redemption arc when the gameplay still requires him to kill dozens and dozens of people.
But it's like a grim game in a way I completely forgot.
I quick saved before killing some of Valkyr heads who were not aggressive at all. You go past a lot of ones that some of them will turn their heads and shoot you for nothing, and most of them don't affect you in any way. And I killed the first ones I saw as Max just to see if he would like say something about it, and he doesn't at all. He doesn't address it.
It's, you know, it's like, I don't know if how much we should attribute this to like the game's tone and how much is just like, this was a kind of a less thoughtful time about video game violence in a lot of ways, where it's like, you just understand that playing a third person shooter, you're gonna kill hundreds of people, and you don't really,
that's why you bought it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like, I don't think there's much deep, I don't think there's any anything deep going on.
Yeah.
In this game,
you can tell because they don't say each other's names.
Yeah. And there's no character who says, you enjoy all the killing, don't you?
Max, as Max eating the painkillers, is not really great either. Like, I think it's just a product of, it's hard to be mad at it. I don't think it's trying to say anything deeper, you know, which will be the point of saying all of that is, I am very curious with the remakes, how they approach some of that stuff.
The part of this game that I did know about that I think is maybe the most kind of iconic bit that we played, other than just the act of diving in slow motion, is this nightmare sequence that happens after Mona drugs you. And it is, it has some real technical hiccups in this version that I'm curious if y'all ran into. But also it works.
I think narratively and visually and sonically it's interesting. I think as a level it's pretty bad. This is like the only part of this game I played where I was like, this fucking,
yeah,
really,
I mean, so I did
doing this.
So what kept happening to me on like a technical level is that it seemed like the level was kind of, the pieces of the level were not perfectly fit together. And so it's like Max would get kind of stuck to a wall, and then I like couldn't turn the corner or whatever in the right way. And so I ended up looking up a map, because they're just big labyrinth levels. They're labyrinths of kind of like suburban hallways that you're running down. And I guess you're just supposed to kind of, is there a thing with the audio where you can like follow it to the exit? I wasn't sure.
Can you, okay. Absolutely can. It's, you can use it in both mazes. The easiest thing to do is the baby, is follow the baby. But like, all of the audio cues are how you follow up. The baby's the loudest one.
Yeah, but like one of the things that I think is so cool here is like the immediate FOV change when you get in, which I think is part of the iconic look of this, is like it gives it a real nightmare-y feeling where like the FOV gets huge, and so the walls of the hallways are kind of like sliding past you really quickly, but it doesn't actually seem like you're moving that fast in a very like dreamlike way. And then you have the baby crying, and then, and I have questions about this, but I don't know if there are spoilers, the things that your wife is saying were very surprising to me, because she essentially sounds like she's pleading with Max, you know, like I assumed you were going to be hearing her pleading with the people who killed her, but like she's pleading with Max, and I don't know if this is just because Max has internalized feeling responsible for her death, or if there was some previously abusive element to their relationship.
I kind of don't know
where those lines come from.
I think it's like internalizing.
Okay.
Like I don't think the game is so smart as to like start hinting at a different plot there, uh-huh. like about like a deeper thing to think about their relationship. Like it really strikes me as like, also Max is drugged at this point,
right?
By Mona, like I really get the sense that he is having delusions under drugs, and like the delusions are fake memories. Or not even fake memories. Like, he is just choosing to be like, I am the reason she died. I effectively killed
yeah.
her.
Which I love the little flashes to where Max really is. Him being in the chair about to be tortured. The little teases at that while you're actively playing this nightmare.
I also did not expect that there would be platforming. And I say that pretty loosely, but like, there are sections, so the first maze is just kind of in hallways. The second maze is this weird, like, it's like a dripping bloodline over kind of a void. And there are parts where you have to jump from one part of the line to the other. And Max has this, like, comically low-gravity jump that he does. And, like, it wasn't hard to make the jumps, but I didn't think that that was going to be part of this.
Yeah.
I have a memory of playing this as a kid with the parental locks on, and I believe that blood line you run on is just like a solid red.
Oh,
line.
I thought you were going to say they made it like green or something.
No, I'm pretty sure it's just like a solid red line, and like it's completely lost what you're supposed to be doing. It's very funny.
This does strike me as something of like, if I played this level young, it would have been kind of a core gaming memory for me, because it is like the game has not been particularly unrealistic before this. I mean, obviously it's like it's unrealistic in that you're moving in slow motion and shooting a bunch of guys, but it's like there aren't any monsters. There hasn't really been any hint that like a world exists outside just normal New York. And so having this like complete break from reality is really striking, especially before, you know, like we had played 7 Far Cries that all have right. this type of level, you know, 5 hours in.
I have not played 7 Far Cries. Played 2 or 3.
So then we wake up, we're tied to a chair.
Oh, actually, one more note from inside the dream is when you're in your house, you find a photo of you and the cop guy that got killed. Because it's like, oh, me and my friend before he died. This guy mattered to me.
And he has the gun.
They're both waving their guns around with their fingers on the trigger and smiling and posing for the photo. It's so funny looking.
You wake up tied to this chair. Blake, I immediately thought of, and Leo, you also played this game. In Alan Wake 2, there's the whole scene where, like, actual Sam Lake in the fiction of the game is yeah. tied to the chair. Do you remember that? Yeah. Is that like an intentional homage to this?
I don't think so.
I think it might Maybe. Be. It seemed like Maybe. He was in the same position.
I mean, Sam Lake's face being on Max Payne, it's gotta all be on the table.
Maybe, yeah, because there are so many subtle Max Payne references in Alan Wake 2, but that's a crazy deep cut.
Yeah, it is.
If it's
we gotta look for a bloody bat in that level now.
Max, he gets the shit beat out of him with a bat, but then he looks very strong because he breaks his chair.
It's so funny because he would have... They're hitting him with this bat in a way he would just die.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
he takes 3 hits of a metal baseball bat to the head, and he's yeah, like, fine.
He's like, oh man, that hurt.
Yeah, it's so funny.
I think another thing that Max Payne 3 does really well is making him feel like an old man who's been beat up. And obviously, he's a young man in this, so maybe young men can take 3 baseball bats to the head more easily.
You want to try that, Jacob? You're a young man.
Yeah.
What do you mean? What do you mean maybe young man could take 3 baseball
bats? I was being funny, Blake. And then my only note from this next level is there's a man who says forget about it 3 times in a row.
I don't even think it's one man. I think it's 3 men saying it each.
They're all just in a room being like, forget about it.
It's so fucking funny.
Well, again,
funny.
Just honoring the culture. They say that word like we say the word like, you know? It's just a filler word.
It's true. There's a technical hitch that I talked about with Blake already, but Leo, I'm curious if you ran into this, because Blake and I solved it in different ways, where there's a thing where you're walking down a stairway, and you're chasing a mobster, and there are three guys standing at the bottom, and they say, hey, get him, and then those three guys run after you, but there's some weird technical thing where you're still in a cutscene, but they can kill you? And so then you just come out of the cutscene and you're dead? Did you run into this?
Skill issue, I think.
That's good. I'm glad. Okay, it was a skill issue. Blake, you just like turned on God mode, right?
Yeah.
You did some cheat codes. I didn't even realize that was a thing, though. Honestly, if there keep being dudes with shotguns around the corner, I might turn on God mode at some point in this playthrough. But I had to basically learn how to back up this set of stairs while in a cutscene, because you could still control your player. And so it's this like, it was this very funny scene of the mobster running downstairs, and you would just see Max in the background, like walking backwards and then turning around and continuing to go up the stairs. And I could get just enough distance between me and the guys that they wouldn't kill me in the cutscene.
It's honestly such a bummer that the PC version of this game is so borked up, because I feel like back in the day, this was a PC first game. I mean, 3D Realms was attached to it, right? Like, they were making 3D first person shooters, like important ones. That it's like a little ironic and a bummer that the current Steam version of this game like kind of sucks and requires a lot of fan-made work.
You would think, I mean, it's like sometimes if a remake is close enough to the original, you can almost be like, oh, they don't want it to be playable because whatever, they want you to buy the remake instead. But in this case, with the Max Payne remakes being released, I don't know, sometime late this year, next year, I have no idea. You would think that like it would be more visibly embarrassing for them to like not have this almost completely unplayable without like a whole host of community mods. It seems like it needs like a GOG release or something.
On the other hand, keep in mind, Remedy does not own Max Payne, so that might actually be the reason it's like Rockstar doesn't give a shit.
Rockstar loves fucking over PC ports more than anyone loves anything.
So this may, like, totally not be a Remedy thing at all.
But Remedy is... They are making the Max Payne things, but they're just not... Mm-hmm. They don't own the license.
Yeah, it's a partnership. Rockstar's owned it, I believe, since Max Payne 1, or maybe shortly, like, right after the release of it. So, like, it's never, like, totally been a Remedy property.
And all credit to the community. Jacob sent me a link to what is a EXE installer that installs like 8 different mods at once that just turn this game into a like the quality of a remaster you would pay for easily.
And dude, all credit to Jacob Geller, who helped teach me how to install things on my computer because I couldn't figure it out.
It's a learned skill. It does not come easily. All right. I think that's the section of Max Payne 1. It ends with you meeting a Russian guy. We're going to go kill some guy at some docks.
Not some docks. We're in Red Hook, baby. This is one of the coolest neighborhoods in New York City. We've got a lot of history we're going to be bringing up tomorrow about Brooklyn as a shipping town. I'm going to be talking about Red Hook next.
Sorry for all the violence that Max Payne is surely going to perpetrate on that community then.
I will say I cheated and gave myself a sniper rifle because I wanted to see what it was like, and y'all are going to love it.
Woo! Yeah, can't wait. Oh, well, there is... Isn't there some... No, it's in the tutorial, actually. They give you a sniper rifle.
The tutorial is so good, where you just press a button to get more bad guys. So
yeah, cool. There's a button that's labeled bad guy, and then you press it and he pops up.
So good. This game is so fucking good.
So that's it. Max Payne 1, I think it should be obvious how... Blake, I am so happy that you are so thrilled to be back here reliving your childhood. It's a fun thing to see.
I mean, I, I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about it more next episode. Maybe it would be dumb to just keep bringing it up. But, like, I am really thrilled that this game feels like it holds up in all the ways that count and all the ways that matter. I think, like, growing up, I feel like the one I liked the most was Max Payne 2, and that is the one I've heard more contemporarily. It's kind of rough, which, like, I'm a little bummed.
Do you mean gameplay-wise or, like, content-wise?
I think, like, just kind of in general. Like, I think people are cooler on Max Payne 2.
I don't know. I don't know. I think that's that Rasevic, who I often watch on YouTube, yeah. I think is still a big Max Payne 2 head. But we'll see. I'm excited to get to that one, too.
Point being, going back to this, I really thought this was going to be a pain in the ass. And it not being a pain in the ass and me just having so much fun. Jacob, I'm not procrastinating on playing this game, which is how you got to know I'm loving it. Because I procrastinate SR like it's my full-time job. I'm really happy. Like, I've had so much fun this week reliving all this shit.
That's great.
Leo, you don't have to lie to us. Do you think you're going to continue to play this after this podcast? Have you got your Max Payne fix, or do you want to see it through to the end?
I kind of have gotten my fix. I feel like I'll listen to the next episode and be set. I totally had a good time with it, but, like, I'm not getting any achievement points for this.
That's true. I will say, around level, we played through level, like, 11 in this. Around level 7, the difficulty started going up really sharply, and I was like, oh, I see how this is going to get annoying in the later
levels. The last section was not promising of, like, you gotta sneak around because you don't have any guns. That part was impossible to me.
One last thing I'd like to point out about my copy of Max Payne 2, as it would appear at least two of the previous owners have signed the back of it. So there is...
But they're not famous? They're just, like, guys?
No, like, this is just pin on here. Wow. So the Mathis family, including... it notes one is 12 years old, and then some more adult-looking signatures, which might be parents, have signed it, and then there are a few other names.
Okay, Sherlock.
So that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I'm going to sign it.
I don't know why they did that, but I love that they did, and I wish more people did.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Well, for Blake Hester, first of all, Leo, thank you so much for being on the show. We do genuinely talk about you all the time on this show, both because of your lovely Nebula content, but also because I think we both really enjoy your presence and your work.
When we do Nebula ads, which are ostensibly supposed to be like, hey, do you love something rotten? Sign up for Nebula and you can hear more. We're always like, sign up. Leo's got shit on here.
Yeah, see,
so
those
good.
Leo Vader outtakes.
Thank you so much. It was really fun to be here, and I always love talking to you too. You're good friends on and off content.
Other than that, other than your wonderful Nebula outtakes, is there anything you want people to know about that you're doing?
Big new video coming hopefully by the end of the month. Finally getting ready to shoot this script I've been working on for half a year. And there'll be a Nebula bonus alongside that. That is the new set of tidbits, the little commentary stuff that I do for each year of videos.
I love those tidbits.
Thank you. Behind the scenes stuff and, explaining how I came to certain ideas and why I like certain things and don't think other things worked out well. I'm very excited for this set because it's from start to finish the, like, puppet arc, the introduction of the puppet. So there's a lot to get into there. Now those came to be
the puppet.
Don't tell me that arc
we
is finished.
Well, they're not going away, but there's an
the
arc.
Puppet we went and bought the clothes for.
That's right. That was one of the best days of my life, like biking to this baby boutique clothes store with you and Jason Daphnis and having that pig puppet fitted for a button-up shirt.
And that poor woman who was working there who just did not want to deal with us.
Yeah.
It was so such a good day. And then we went to a great deli afterwards.
Cecil's.
God, I miss Minneapolis. I miss Minneapolis, dude. New York fucking sucks.
We miss you. Minneapolis is kind of like the real New York.
Yeah, that's what I've always said. New York, Minneapolis, I think, is at least the first summer I lived there, Leo, maybe you can attest, was definitely closer to New York and Max Payne than real New York is.
Yeah, your neighborhood,
it was crazy. It was crazy that summer.
I mean, they did burn down a police station there, which, you know,
still burnt
pretty,
down.
Pretty Max Payne.
Iconic.
Still burnt down.
That's right.
They rebuilt the Target, but not the police station. It's so
they're still voting on what to turn it into and not liking what the outcome is, so trying to vote on it again.
For Boycaster, this has been episode one of our Something Rotten season on Max Payne 1 and 2. My name is Jacob Geller. I don't know about angels, but it's fear that gives men wings. Bye!